just to launch this conversation.
This is our playground.
They have spontaneous conversations. They don't plan this.
I mean, there's actually something sort of spiritual about that.
What's he do? He's a human being.
Yeah, I'm a sexist feminist.
We should be friends.
And good evening, ladies and gentlemen, brothers and sisters all around the globe. Sounds so grandiose, doesn't it?
They are. They're listening from all around
they
the world.
You know,
all of planet Earth.
Yes.
Hello.
Yeah. Good evening, everyone. And welcome to the latest edition of the Rob and Callie Show. I'm Callie Alpert here with my brother from another mother. I got to come up with something new. I know that's very redundant, but good evening, Robbie.
Good evening. This is Rob K coming to you live from the talkradio.nyc studios on the Upper West Side of Manhattan. And we are here. And
yeah, we are here. We are live on talkradio.nyc. We are live on Facebook Live. Thank you, everyone, and welcome. Thank you for your support and for listening and now watching us.
What's up, y'all?
It is what I like to call a bad hair night here in New York City.
It's raining a little.
Which is a very shallow thing for me to say, given that we're getting the periphery of hurricanes and there's a lot of people that have some very serious hurricane stories to tell. So that's my shallow relationship with the weather tonight.
It's hard to complain when like a million people in Florida still don't have their power.
Yeah, I'm not
it's
complaining
like,
at all.
I don't know. We're winning.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So how was your week? Anything you want to say? Share with me.
I'm trying to think. Everything's good. Lashana Tovad,
oh, yes.
All our Jew friends,
yes,
who are celebrating the
yes.
Happy New Year.
Yes, happy, healthy New Year.
Yeah, but everything is all right. You know, I'm focusing on gratitude and gratitude. So, yeah, can't go wrong with that.
In that order.
Yeah. How about some gratitude? Yeah. How about some more gratitude?
Yeah, definitely.
So things to be grateful
for. Yeah, that is definitely true.
How about you? How was your week?
My week, well, speaking of gratitude, my week is, I've got a lot going on, which sounds very cryptic and mysterious, but a lot of contrasts, I should say. So, you know, when the shit storms hit and life gets challenging, it's been waking me up to all the more reason to have, you know, those joyous moments and to really kind of find the contrast and really make a point of making that a priority.
Right.
Just to keep everything balanced and to keep still on the inside. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to prioritize the gratitude when I can. Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
It's on the list.
It's definitely, it's high on the list and it makes a difference. It does. I won't get into the Jerry and Esther Hicks speech yet. I mean, I did listen. I got a little fix earlier today because I had the luxury. You know what I did do? And this is like, I don't know if I should acknowledge that this is the first time ever in my life in my early 50s that I've gone to jury duty. I don't know why they haven't caught up with me.
Right.
It's not that I've intentionally tried to skirt my civic duties. Sorry, I'm already scratching our guests inadvertently over here.
In Jersey, they're not so concerned about criminal activity.
Well, you know, so here's the deal. I do live in probably one of the two most corrupt counties in the country, I believe, right outside of New York City, Hudson County. I'm not proud or happy about that because it, you know, that's not cool. That said, I was so impressed with the way they handle their, you know, you go there and it's like going to the DMV or the post office or something, you know, that same attitude of you, you know, everybody's just sort of kind of schlepping along and it's a very gratuitous exercise and nobody wants to be there. And yet it's an obligation. You have to be there.
Right.
And they really did such a great job of engaging everyone and reminding us in a really grounded way of what an honor it is to be here.
Right.
The history, you know, other people from other countries that come that don't even have a judicial system that works. And I say that in quotes because on certain days we might not agree with that.
Mm.
But where people are, you know, entitled to, that kind of a system.
Right.
And to really be open-hearted and interested and open-minded about it, which is how I felt. Actually, I was fascinated by the whole thing.
Right.
Ultimately, I did not get put on a case. But I, you know, I'll stop there. But it was really a very interesting experience. And so shout out to them for the video that they did, because my producer mind was like, was that video a nationwide video or a statewide video?
Right.
And it was statewide, as it turned out. And I was very entranced.
Well, I was going to ask if they played the video for you, because you feel patriotic at the end. You're like, all right, this isn't so bad, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I remember I went one morning for jury duty, and this is years ago, I was in Brooklyn. And And they played, or no, I was in a bad mood about it. I'm like, God, I don't want to be here. I know it's my civic duty. I really don't want to have to do jury duty. And then they played that video, and I was like, all right, you know, if I got to do it, that's fine. And then all of a sudden, they're like, we need everybody to wait in the break room. We're going to figure things out. We'll get back to you. And so we're all like on the computers there, whatever, because it's before like smartphones really took off. And then like half an hour later, they come on the loudspeaker and they're like, all the cases have been cleared for today. You all can go. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right.
Yeah.
I guess that's how when you let it go works, you know? Once exactly. I was like, all right, I'll be here. They're like, you can go.
Exactly. Yeah. There's a little part of me, I want to say disappointed, because right now the timing doesn't work for me, but I'm interested in all of that. And I think it will be interesting when it goes differently and I can actually sit and commit to, you know, a case and maybe, you know, make some positive impact in someone's world. You know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Enough about us. Would you like to introduce our guest?
Yes. Okay. So our guest tonight's show is The Life of a Writer. And we have a writer on the show. And it's actually someone I've known for a while who's an excellent writer.
An esteemed writer.
Right? A well-known writer. And a very creative writer. So tonight's guest is Alan Salkin. Alan is a world-renowned trend writer, author, filmmaker, and journalist. His first book is Festivus, The Holiday for the Rest of Us, with a foreword by Jerry Stiller, a journalistic romp through the world of Festivus. His second book, From Scratch, The Uncensored History of the Food Network. For it, Alan interviewed on-camera talent like Mario Batali, Bobby Flay, Giada De Laurentiis, Anthony Bourdain, and Guy Fieri to tell the gripping 20-plus-year history of the network that changed the way the world eats and thinks about food. Prior to making a living as a writer, Alan has had many jobs, including casting industrial films in Hong Kong, wholesaling rubber duckies in Las Vegas, picking oranges in Crete, and peddling oil paintings door-to-door in Western Australia. I mean, who hasn't done that? He's also a fan of the Olympics, which he has attended 9 in his life.
Right.
So welcome to the show, Alan.
Welcome, Alan.
Thanks. Very happy to be here.
Did you like that intro? Did that do
I wrote
service?
It. I would have edited it differently, though. I wouldn't have spent so much time on Festivus.
Ah, okay. What would you have spent more time on?
On like the trend stories that I wrote for the New York Times and stuff, like the monocle one.
Yeah,
monocles are those, you know, the one lens in your eye thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I gave Rob full permission to edit it as he wanted to.
Yeah,
you did a fine job.
I actually liked it. I thought it was very interesting stuff for me. Hopefully, the audience will agree. If not, we will send out a separate bio that you write.
Okay.
And we'll do a post. How's that?
That sounds good.
All right, good.
So speaking of monocles, thanks for that segue. Pardon me. What is it? Now, we could just jump right in, but we do want to back up and sort of get to the, you know, early trajectory of your career, because I'm pretty fascinated by how varied.
I want to step on you for just 1 second.
Please, so please do.
A couple
Rob
things.
Rob does all the time.
First of all, this is actually a good hair day.
For me?
And it would be for you. If you let your curly hair be curly.
Oh, okay. Oh,
you are
nice.
A curly hair fighter, and I can see it. Because you have potentially very beautiful curly hair. Right now, you've sort of fought it down into beautiful wavy hair.
Thank you.
So if you fully embraced your curls, you would see that this humid weather is curl heaven.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, speaking from our curly hair,
exactly.
Dude, I'm going to make a note of that. Thank you. I appreciate the...
I wrote a trend piece once about curly hair, and there's a salon downtown which has changed hands a couple of times, but called Divashan downtown New York, and they have products called No Poo and the like. And so, anyway, there's a lot of people who are into letting their curls shine.
Yeah, I actually have some Diva product at home, but until they pay us for sponsorship, we're not going to talk about them too much.
But I haven't combed my hair in like a decade.
It's great. Alan is letting the curls go free.
Exactly. So okay, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, and it's lovely. You have good curls. You do. We'll bring you back for the curly hair show that we actually talked about doing.
That's true. We have another guest as well, so it'll be the curly show. But getting to the beginning of your writing career, is that what you're going to ask about, Kelly?
Well, I was curious, you know, so we could get to the early part of your career. Why don't we start with that? But I'm interested in what were your early tendencies for esoteric subject matter, speaking of things like monocles and all the other stories that we want to hear about that you've written over the years.
Wow. Well, you know, my brother says I'm the most pedantic person alive. And so I think that, you know, I started out basically...
Wait, I didn't do well on the SATs. What does pedantic mean?
I think it means something like I am overly focused on annoying details.
Okay, thanks.
But
go ahead.
I
feel smarter already.
Your listeners can leave a comment on the Facebook live stream and they can redefine it properly.
I'll take a look and see.
But, you know, I started off basically after college. I went to Berkeley and I decided to be a writer. And I was living in San Francisco trying to, like, write poetry and publish myself and get published in zines and things like that. And I think, you know, I just tend to see, and I always have, that, like, little things mean a lot. And you can find the whole meaning of the world in something really silly. And I guess... since a lot of my story ideas come to me while sitting in a large bathtub, it's mostly
in New York City.
Well, I do. I have this weird walk-up apartment that I installed a massive jacuzzi bathtub in.
Wow.
I have the nicest bathtub on the Lower East Side.
Wow, that sounds nice. Like an invitation to our listeners.
You're welcome.
Or somebody else, Callie.
You're welcome to come. There have been two people, even three, in there at times.
Show is getting into it.
Let's not bury any leaves.
Yeah, your writing's great. Anyway, so what about these parties in your tub?
One of them led to an ill-fated engagement. I'll put it that way.
Okay, so we're going to have you back for part two.
Yeah. Well, were all three of you engaged? Was it going to be a polyamorous sort of household?
No.
Or did you favor one over the other?
One was an ex-girlfriend who kind of manipulated the entire thing in order to hook me up with the new person.
Oh.
I think she wanted me out of her hair.
Oh.
Did anybody have curly hair?
Yes.
Wait, did anybody get curlier hair?
Well, in the hot tub, in the jacuzzi bath, there's a lot of steam, and that will curl your hair.
Wow.
There you go.
So much tie-in already here. There's so
many segues. Am I allowed to say pubic hair on the show?
You can say whatever you want.
So some of the pubic hairs that emerged in the bathtub, isn't this disgusting? I don't like pubic hair, so anyway, moving on. Well, how do we get here?
Ties right back into your early writing career,
curly
right?
Hair, yes.
Okay, I knew we would come like back around to it.
Exactly.
So there you are, writing for a zine, talking about pubic hairs.
Yeah, but Gawker, when it used to exist, they, I think they were trying to insult me when they called me the Seymour Hersh of the Sunday Style section. So, you know, Seymour Hersh was a famous investigative reporter that, you know, wrote about the My Lai massacre. And I think that's what I would do with the Times, especially. I would find these silly little things and then I would go ridiculously deep on them and somehow show that, like, just because, for instance, the fact that women were ordering steaks more and more, there was something that friends of mine had noticed. So women were ordering steaks on dates in order to prove something to men, like I'm a low maintenance kind of gal and I can eat a steak. I'm not just going to, you know, be prissy and order a salad. And so you start to see like a whole larger sociological, trend in just the fact that, you know, steak sales among women are up.
Mm-hmm. But you didn't. Well, we actually will. When we come back from break, I'd like to hear more about that, because I'm curious as to, like, when you set out to write, were you setting out to be a writer? Were you setting out to be a sociologist? Like, how was it all born? So when we come back, more with Alan Salkin. Sorry, I mispronounced your name. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo woo!
What's that?
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Rob and Callie Show. Tonight, our guest is writer extraordinaire Ann Sulkin. Welcome, everybody, in the Facebook live stream. Really appreciate everybody watching. And Callie's going to give some shout-outs.
I'm going to give some Facebook live shout-outs. I just want to say hello to Pamela, to Denise, to Eamon. Thank you guys for joining us. I adore you all, and we always appreciate your support. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you, everybody, for watching. Thanks for listening to talkradio.myc. So we're just getting into the beginning story of Alan's life. There he is with a pencil and a pad and wants to tell stories.
Actually, you know, let's first of all, you said you almost said Aaron Sorkin. So someday I'm going to get in a room with Aaron Sorkin and Alec Sulkin, who writes for Silicon Valley. And we're all going to – I'm the least famous of all the – almost Alan Sulkins out there. Anyway, I think in some ways the real training to be a journalist and how that happened was that I would be at parties and I felt like I didn't belong and I wasn't right and I was too much of a freak and no girl would talk to me. So I would stand in the corner and I would take out a notebook and I would just start writing notes about how that none of the girls liked me and... You know, I'd make observations about why everybody was a jerk in the room and their, you know, how their clothing, you know, reflected this lack of imagination. And I'd have
how old were you, like 12?
No, unfortunately, I was more like 22. And, you know, and then, I mean, ultimately, I was living in Los Angeles. I'd been working for my father for a while who was selling, he imported baby toys and rubber duckies.
Okay.
So that's how I got the rubber ducky thing. Yeah. Going.
And I had to mention that, dude. I don't think I've ever met anyone who sold rubber duckies.
Yeah,
especially if you're going to get that gig, it's only through nepotism. I mean,
yes,
right.
Those are very hard gigs to get.
Son, you're going to follow me and follow the ducks.
Exactly. And they were only the cheapest. These were like 99-cent store rubber duckies. These were not, So they came in and buy the container load from China. So what the hell was I talking about? So I was working for him and I was living in Los Angeles and I took a I wanted to take a writing class of some kind and just they had a Saturday news writing class that was at the right time of day and worked into my schedule and I ended up going to UCLA and just for this one class and I wrote for the Sunday for the weekly Daily Brune, which was the newspaper there. Mm-hmm. And my first story, I covered a garlic festival. I got in for free. I got to meet the Garlic Queen, who had been in a bunch of Russ Meyer movies. And
what did she look like?
She was about 9 feet tall, blonde, and each one of her breasts was like the size of Peter Dinklage.
It's an interesting configuration.
She was an Amazon. She was an Amazon.
And was she wearing garlic? Did she smell of garlic?
She probably had a garlic garland of some kind. Okay. But no, listen, I guess if you'd oiled her up and, you know, smeared garlic on her, she would, you know, and put her on the grill, she would have been delicious. But but the truth was, I got to go to the front of the line and I got to eat free stuff. And then my college girlfriend, who I'd broken up with years before and broken my heart, happened to be working at like the hospital at UCLA and actually saw the story and was impressed. So up to that point, I'd published like one short story in a zine, a bunch of little poems here and there. But basically, all of a sudden now I'm getting published, I'm getting free food, and it's impressing chicks.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of, I was like, this works.
Mm-hmm. So and when some men have their rock and roll fantasy about being a drummer or guitar player to get laid, you discovered that writing could be your lady magnet.
If only I had known how to parlay it properly. I wish I could go back.
Oh, that's youth.
So where did it go from there in terms of the your affinity for those kinds of stories? Because they are so I want to say delicious, and I don't mean to be cute, because later you emerged into more of the food world, which we'll get to. But what were some of your other most outstanding stories that you enjoyed doing? Also, I mean, for the experience, right? Because you're dipping into people's lives or into certain cultures.
You know what it is? I have a policy that I developed as early as I could and followed as much as I could, which was kind of two things. Number one, I would do stories that got me to a beach. I always would try to do stories that got me to beach. And then I also tried to not write about the mafia, the Kennedys, or World War II. And by that, I also mean I just didn't... When I first started, I went to journalism school at NYU and then eventually got a job at the New York Post, which some people may know by their crazy front pages and crazy headlines. But there's actually serious... you know, journalism work that goes on there. And a lot of my early years, I was just following, you know, plane crashes. And I mean, I did even interview Bill. My first question of the president was to Bill Clinton on Block Island. And I said the following: are you here for Barbara Streisand's wedding? And he gave me a good answer about it, which was that no. But then he went, rambled on, and I, you know, got a great story out of it. Because they thought Barbara Streisand was getting married that weekend, so they sent me to, like, stake him out.
Oh, wow. He was just there because...
He was there because he was on the way to Martha's Vineyard for one of their vacations, and no president had visited in years, and they could just touch the helicopter down. He had an ice cream cone and, you know, waved to everybody. Anyway, I have more Bill Clinton stories, but I'll leave it there. And, So I realized in covering all these stories, there's this big pack of press that goes around, and I was just more inspired by the kind of people who would make their own stories, you know, who would go different places and zag when everyone else was zigging. And, you know, I don't know. There's a lot of people who just sit around newspapers or used to, when there used to be people working there, who would just wait to be told what to do. And I didn't like that. I would just... literally, if I was looking for a story, I would leave the building. I had one editor who would say, there's no stories in here. They're all out there. And I would just walk in New York or wherever I was and then find a story. And so I hope that's an answer. I mean, I don't really know. It's just what interested me. And you know, it's just sort of like everything kind of bothers me. I'm kind of got that Larry David kind of quality of I can make a mountain out of any molehill.
Right. Which, by the way, it's so great that Curb Your Enthusiasm is back. I'm just so excited about that. Yeah. Right. So have you always found that you like to tell stories, or this was something new for you?
You know, I don't... I was kind of, I guess... It's hard for me to, like, reclaim and understand what I was doing as a kid and what I really liked. You know, I just literally came from my shrink's couch, you know, before I was here. Or actually went to a ski event, a PR event, and then I came here. But
same thing.
Ski basically. Event, yeah. And, well, in some ways, it is.
It's because therapeutic.
Yeah, skiing is very therapeutic. Right. But, you know, skiing was a thing that I loved as a kid for real, and I knew I loved it. And it's like, was I a shy kid, or was I just sort of like... you know, confused and beaten down by a bunch of things. And so I was shy, and that's why I was standing there in the writing stories in the notebook. But I don't know. I've found that now I've been taking an acting class in LA and I've done some improv, and I love being, you know, on stage in front of people. And maybe that's the real me, or maybe that was just the me that eventually grew.
Right.
You know, and so I didn't intend to be a journalist. I thought I was going to, you know, write stories and novels and maybe movies. And in a way, I'm still working on that career. You know, it's like I still have hopefully another 20 or 30 years of productivity to go.
At least.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, you're a young man. You never know. You never know. And it's going to, right? It could be many, many decades from now.
Harry Dean Stanton had his best, you know, roles in his 50s.
Yeah. Well, and you think about all the others that, you know, what now I'm thinking quickly.
Frank McCourt.
Well, no, but I'm also thinking like Colonel Sanders in his 80s and, you know, Tony Randall having babies.
Now, there's a guy who got laid a lot, Colonel Sanders.
Colonel Sanders, he's
kind of
hot.
He did.
He's
absolutely.
Not really. Not to me. Well, I was like, no, I just totally...
As much fried chicken as you want?
Yeah, I don't know. That's not exactly... that's not the first thing on my list.
What a dreamboat.
An aphrodisiac fried chicken. But, you know, going back to the idea, because we share this. We kind of had our quick email exchange when we knew you were coming on the show. And, you know, my medium has always been television and video, but I also have had the great pleasure of dipping into so many subcultures and lives and experiences where it's like fast and hard because they're short-lived, depending on what your outlet is, and but they're powerful. And like you said so aptly in an email, often it's the only time this particular person's going to have a public voice to share their story and be heard. Or well, a voice at all, right?
I remember.
It's a responsibility.
Yes, it is. I remember I was in Berkeley one summer and I was freelance writing in about, I think, 2003 or 4. And I was driving past a waterbed store. And when I was a kid, I had waterbeds. In fact, I have a waterbed now, thanks to the story that I did. And
so wait, so they jump from the hot tub time machine into your waterbed.
Wow. That's quite right.
Are you a water sign?
No, Aries.
Okay, just checking. All right, a lot of water.
Yeah,
themes.
The Ram. But I saw this waterbed store, and I thought, wait a second, you used to see waterbed stores all over the place. It's like the Maytag repairman. Like, what is going on here? So I went in there and I met this guy, Roland Formica. And, you know, I was just so touched by him. And yeah, and he's just one of the many examples of, like, you know, over the years, Roland has since, like, come to every book reading I've ever done in San Francisco. And it's like you become part of their lives because this story is going to hang in his store. His relatives are going to see it. Mm. This is a story in the New York Times. It's the paper of record. Yeah. And there's a responsibility to, like, first of all, spell his name right.
Yeah.
You know, tell his story the best you can. And bring to it everything that you can. And then also believe that your responsibility is to him, but is also to do it right and to bring your art to it, but also to the readers to tell a good story.
And to the outlet for which you're working, depending
on. Yeah, but that sort of, I think, comes from if you do everything else right.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, you're representing that place. You know, you walk in, and that's one of the downsides of working for the New York Times. Is people just see you as if you have New York Times, you know, tattooed on your forehead, and they bring all of their feelings about the newspaper to you if you're writing for them. And they have all these questions about it, and you're just like, I was going to hand out like a sheet. You know, here's the stuff you want to know about the, you know, I do think of most of my story ideas. Anyway, I don't want to go through the whole thing.
Just make a t-shirt.
Yeah.
And then people would
think you're a jerk and you don't work. So there's that. There's also just in the larger sense, you're a journalist. And especially now with some people thinking that all journalists are making everything up, there's this, sometimes you have to slowly say, I'm not making everything up. I'm very interested in, you know, everything that's true here. And if you want it to be right, you have to talk to me.
Right.
So there's all that is in play.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about this whole idea about fake news? Just the term.
I think, you know, obviously I don't like it, but just to give it its due for a second. You watch all these magazines dying, and you see that, for instance, Rolling Stone is, you know, up for sale right now. And a lot of those, and I hate to say,
by the way, when I was a kid, like, I waited every week for that Rolling Stone magazine. I mean, it's incredible to even think about them going out of business.
It is. And hopefully they're not going out of business. They're just young winners selling it.
Right.
Yeah.
But you know, I think Rolling Stone was always pretty good. And because it wasn't what a lot of these other magazines were. You know, Esquire in the 60s was a great magazine. But then towards the time when I was reading, in the 80s and then in the 90s when I was trying to start writing for these places, and I think it's gotten better again because because there's no money left in it in a way, they can almost sort of just focus on being good. And I just think, you know, a lot of those magazines, you would open them up. They would open to the watch ad. They reeked of cologne and perfume.
Oh my gosh, remember those perfume samples?
Yeah. but you couldn't open the damn thing to where the stories were. Mm-hmm. And then the stories, oh, isn't this funny? There's a story about luxury watches that I can't afford. And 10 pages later, because they had to separate it, there's 10 ads for luxury watches. Mm-hmm. And so I think there is a sense that sometimes the media is not holding up its responsibility to the people for whom it's supposed to represent. You know, they say you're supposed to afflict the comfortable and comfort the afflicted.
Sounds like a metaphor for the government, analogous to the government.
Yeah.
But I digress.
That's right. That's right. So we're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll get into Festivus. We'll get into the Food Network. We'll be talking all about that. Thank you, everybody, for watching and listening. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
If you have an interest in marijuana, you want to know about marijuana, law, policy, and culture, then feel free to join me, Joseph A. Bondi, every Friday at 11 o'clock in the morning on my show, In the Know 420 on TalkingAlternative.com.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff, like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place, because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.nyc.
Talking Alternative Radio, 24 hours a day.
Everybody likes our music. Like, everybody dances in the studio when they hear that
yeah,
music.
Yeah, oh, did you get a little groove on? I missed it.
A little
I was
bit.
Too busy Alan's looking,
getting his
looking
groove
at
on.
Sam. Nice. Yeah. Welcome back, everybody, to the Rob and Callie Show here on talkradio.nyc and streaming live on Facebook Live. We are here with our guest journalist, Alan Salkin, and we are talking about all things stories, media, different, quick history of different magazines. Did you have a thought you wanted to finish before I ask you the next question? Something about, you were comparing just sort of the different sense maybe of elegance or purity or lack thereof, you know, between like the 70s and now. And magazines are obsolete, so I know that's a loaded question.
Yeah, but maybe magazines, they started becoming these things that made money. And, you know, just like when music changed from, you know, being about people trying to express themselves and trying to do the thing itself as well as possible into this business.
Yeah.
You know, the sort of integrity may have gotten lost in some pub. And so I can see, you know, excuse me, I used to be really annoyed by this sort of certain attitude in certain publications of, well, we know everything and you don't know anything. Mm. And I think if you see the way some people are ready to hate the media, they probably still have this sense of like, they're not getting it. The media is not getting it. And unfortunately, you know, in a time when there's cutbacks in the business, it's harder to send reporters out to find, you know, more stories. But I'll wrap up the thought just by saying I've noticed, because I've applied for a fellowship to go spend a month at the McDowell Colony, that there really are a lot of new sources of funding to support journalists in doing things so that they don't have to be necessarily affiliated with a major news organization. Mm-hmm. There are opportunities out there, and people understand that this is important.
Yeah,
Alan, what's the McDowell Colony?
Yeah, thank you.
Well, it's like Yaddo, if you heard of that. There's basically, it's a place up in the Northeast somewhere. I think it's either in New Hampshire or Vermont. I'm going to go with New Hampshire. And they give you basically a place to live and take care of everything and cut out all your distractions. They bring you a little lunch every day. So, and it's for artists and all kinds of different mediums, including writers. So a lot of books that you may love and writers you may love go up there and, you know, are able to step out of a world in which it's, you know, can be very difficult to do something as slow as writing a book.
Mm-hmm. Mm. just the idea of tuning out, and I do have a good amount of artists and writer friends that have enjoyed a lot of great like fellowships around the country. So there's such a value. I think there's a value for all human beings in doing that. And in fact, even today I had a moment at jury duty of all things where I noticed you're not allowed to have phones in the courtroom. And it was really quiet and nobody was looking down at their hands. Like everyone was present with one person, the judge, speaking to them.
I'm going to give a pitch for the by far the best productivity tool that anybody can have as a writer.
Which is what?
It's called Freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's called Mac Freedom sometimes. It's a little program. It costs almost nothing. You put it on your computer and you say to it, I would like 10 minutes with no internet. And you just push, you know, you push return and it cuts off your internet. And you think it's not going to matter. Oh, I'll just have the strength to not check my email. As soon as that thing goes on, you start writing.
Huh.
It's magic.
It makes me a little sad that we really need that, but it's interesting. You know, it's an interesting concept.
Yeah, well, it's like one of the things that I'm going to start saying on the show is put the phones down, people.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
I want to end
but
the show
now,
with that a little bit.
But not now, because please leave as many comments
no.
as
when
you can.
Right, at the end of the show, right.
And then after Noreen's show.
That's right.
After.
But also, you remind me about the value of having an actual newspaper in my hand or magazine in my hand. I still like that. You know,
yeah.
Reading online is great, but I like getting a newspaper and, like, looking through it. You know, the Sunday Times is so great to look through in my hand with the paper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Overrated.
Maybe.
It's a ritual.
I mean, listen, that's it. I'm getting the Wall Street Journal delivered these days, and I'm really enjoying it. There is a way of a luxury to it, and there's a way of it that spreads out on the table in the kitchen that's very pleasant.
Mm.
The smell, the feel, it's like an old, you know, like a book.
Yeah.
So I wanted to circle back to something because we like to, as much as we can, you know, use our guests and their stories as a way to find some, you know, for people that aren't writers and aren't journalists and might not have a piece ever published in the New York Times. But there's always some sense of universality that we try to find. And one of the themes that you brought up, I thought you brought up earlier, is the idea of curiosity, you know, and sort of approaching the world with beginner's mind it's beginner's mind is the expression, right? I think an old boss of mine used to say that about me when I first started working with him. I didn't know that that was an expression. I didn't know I was doing that. But, you know, it's kind of the way you talked about earlier, how you launched into stories or how you'd go out into the world and just sort of live and be and keep your eyes open and your heart open and things would show up as opposed to things coming to you. And I think there's some sort of an interesting theme here just that's applicable to every, you know, to all our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what do you guys think? That is curiosity a lost art form?
You know, one thing I always think about is that because I've been doing this so long, I know how to ask questions. And I compare myself to like a boxer. If a boxer gets in a fight in a bar or something, his fists are considered deadly weapons. So he can't really get in a fight. And I find sometimes that if I'm in conversations with people, I can get deep so fast, you know, that it's almost like people don't even know what's going on. And it's almost like it's almost unfair. I can like crack people. And I'm not trying to brag about it. It's almost not a good thing. But in answer to your question, I think, you know, it's about, you know, trying to understand that most likely people. Every single person you meet has a story in them. Mm-hmm. And if you ask the right questions and you don't just, you know, dismiss them, it's hard for me still. Because, you know, as a reporter, I'm basically, you know, looking for somebody to be something I need or I have an idea of what I want. And so I'm sometimes pushing people into the categories. But I have learned, you know, in real life, it's try to look people in the eye. Think about that this is a person and ask a few questions. And, you know, it's so true that, like, some of these basic things like, do you have brothers and sisters? Where are you from? I mean, I'm saying them because they're so annoying sometimes. Right. But they do. Do you love your dog? What kind of dog do you have? You know, and eventually you're going to get somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, Alan, you're not a small talk kind of guy then. I just get this feeling like you just don't want to
no.
do small talk. You want to get right into it.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, what I usually want to know is, like, please tell me about the complete crisis that is your romantic life. You know, who in your family is the worst addict? You know, what's the worst story you can possibly tell me about your existence? And I
right.
love that stuff.
Yeah.
I feed on it.
We'll talk about that during the break. And
okay.
then after the show. I'm sure that'll carry over.
Well, I mean, Rob knows me well enough, very well, number one. And he knows like how deeply this all resonates with me. Like I could do this with you for 3 days, this topic, because I'm very similar like that. And also when you have a journalist or a producer, when you're doing it professionally, and who knows what comes first, the chicken or the egg. For me, I think curiosity came first based on all kinds of, you know, deep stuff about the way I, you know, just how I was formed as a kid that I could bore you with on another time.
Yeah.
And then from that, you sort of step into your career. But then there is the other side of you that's always, you're working, you're on the clock, you're spending someone's money, and it does have to be done efficiently. And it's always an interesting balance to stay out of your ego and be, for me, a human being first, well before I'm a producer. I've always said that. And
it's hard.
Be really present for them. But getting back to sort of, you know, people at large, outside of specific industries, I still find that curiosity and real presence is a lost art form. And that most people are not looking each other in the eye, are not genuinely curious, because they're more interested in what they have to contribute or spitting out whatever it is that they want to throw into the conversation. And I'm generalizing, certainly. But this is a real sensitive topic for me, so maybe my selective attention is that I tend to notice that more than I should, and I struggle because I always want to get right into the, you know, meat.
I think it's important to remember that, like, before we had cell phones and stuff to read all the time, there was a lot of boring downtime that was totally wasted. And yes, it's nice that we could, like,
there was like looking at the trees and listening to the birds.
Yeah, sometimes
it
you
was
would
so
like
boring.
Right. Sometimes you would lay there and
you'd actually sit and talk to somebody on the train or at the bus stop.
Yeah, that's good. And we all look at our phones too much. But it's also nice having that little thing where you can all of a sudden just catch up on the news or where the latest hurricane is.
Right. That's true. I want to talk about the value of asking questions, because I'm not the kind of guy who is looking to be impressed at all. But one of the things that really impresses me is when someone asks me a good question. If I'm on a date with a girl and she asks a really good question, I am so much more attracted to her, because I love that level of interest from one human being to another. And I remember, Callie, when you and I first met, and still, even as friends, And I have other friends, I'll be talking to them on the phone, and I'll say, that's a really good question. I just love good questions.
So I'm looking at you, and you're, for a guy who's, how old are you? If you don't want to say, you don't have to. But you are kind of like me, and like, you haven't really lost your hair.
Dude, I am so winning, okay?
Right, so this is my question to you. I'm just looking at you, and that's the first question, like, did you, as a kid, like, were you worried? Like, when did you start worrying you were going to lose your hair? And at what point did you realize, hey, I'm doing okay here?
I don't think I ever really worried about it. I don't know. It's like once I remember a hairstylist told me that you get your grandfather's hair on your mother's side. Mm-hmm. And so he had his hair. So I was like, all right, I guess I'm set. So
but now you must go through your day looking at guys. You're like, I'm doing better than him, you know?
Yeah, but it's like, you know, there are girls that love bald guys. So I think it depends on the person, you know?
Is that even true?
There, it is for, I've heard that it is. Yes, I've heard.
Callie's not going to speak from personal experience. She read this somewhere in a zine.
You know what? I'm an equal. I try to be an equal opportunity lover.
No, listen,
girl.
There's a lot of
preference for hair. I do like hair.
There's a lot of chicks who like Tom Colicchio, and I hate using the word chick so much.
He's very.
Telly Savalas, for those of you who remember.
Lollipops.
A little bit before. So we got a couple minutes before we go to break. I want to ask you, because I've been a writer most of my life, copywriting, and I've written some personal stuff, creative projects. And one of the things I'm always amazed by is when I feel like something came through me, like it was just channeled through me. Mm. Paul McCartney talks about Let It Be came to him in a dream, and he woke up and he wrote it. So have you ever found that with yourself, that you just got in touch with a part of yourself and you're like, I don't even know where that came from?
Oh, it's almost all channeling. I don't even like speak about it. I mean, it's just, it, you know, when you're at a, under deadline, you're at a newspaper, there's pressure, so that you have to channel at that time. But you know, and it's, you know, hopefully it'll always keep coming. I don't know, but absolutely, it's something mystical. You're putting, you know, you're tapping into some big thing out there, and maybe that's the secret to being a writer, and that's the secret that anybody can get into. It's like, yeah, I think, you know, I see people like Bob Dylan or people like Paul McCartney and you know, even more modern names I could bring up. And, you know, I feel some affinity because I've given myself time, maybe, or maybe I have more an ability to, like, hear what the music of the cosmos. I don't know. But it's out there for anybody to tap into.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Awesome answer. And it was a great question, by the way.
It was a great question.
I'm impressed with myself.
You should be.
Anyway, we're going to go to break. When we come back, I do want to talk about some of your books, and we'll get into some takeaways. We will be right back.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to SecretsOfTheSire.com.
Hello, this is Mark Torres.
And Pronto Comics' own Dominic Sperano.
And listen to our show, It Came From the Radio, right here on talkradio.nyc, every Wednesday, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We talk about entertainment, movies,
comic books, and other news.
So make sure you check us out. That's right here, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, every Wednesday, talkradio.nyc.
TalkingAlternative.com.
And welcome back to the final quarter of this week's episode of The Robin Callie Show here on talkradio.nyc, streaming live on Facebook Live. We are here with our guest, very interesting and esteemed journalist, Alan Salkin. And during the commercial break, we learned that he, as much as he favors his hair on his head, that in other ways,
we should just change the title. This is the hair episode.
Okay.
Yeah.
We were going to.
No, I'm hairless almost everywhere except on my head. That's what I said. And my thing that I've been saying since I was a kid is because people are always like, "Do you shave your legs?" And I would say, "I've just evolved farther than most people. I am Darwin at work."
Funny. So before the break, we were talking about just the idea. Rob asked an amazing question.
Because I'm in the presence of great question askers.
We all, I mean, you and I, we pride ourselves on, well, I wouldn't say that's not the right language, but we know that it's something that's dear to us.
Mm-hmm.
And it is sort of the way, it's a barometer also for our closest relationships when there's a sense of reciprocity and a sense of equal curiosity. Mm-hmm. I have to work on doing the opposite. I've been really trying to dig deep about this, which is because I do have a sensitivity to it that way precedes, you know, anything like right now in life. It's old stuff, but I shut down if I don't feel a sense of reciprocity or depth with people. If I don't feel like they're asking me questions, I have a really extreme reaction. I'm trying to grow out of that and sort of learn some patience.
Hmm.
Yeah.
But I think that's why we value it so much, because we live in an age of selfies and people focusing on themselves. So it's so nice when people get out of themselves and they're like, "Oh, so what was that story about? What happened to you?"
Yeah. So for the benefit of our listeners and viewers on Facebook Live, hi, everybody.
That's right.
Especially that we're nearing the end of this show. In the name of some takeaways, one of the other things that maybe sparked for me that might be interesting for us to talk about is for people that are not, you know, that are maybe are writers on the inside, just the art form of writing and the fact that it can be a meditative experience. You talked about writing coming through you guys, you know, and words sort of finding their way through you. And that happens with often the most purest forms of art for people. But Alan, do you think that there's benefits to people writing that would consider themselves to be, quote unquote, non-writers?
Well, I mean, first of all, remember I said most of my best story ideas come to me in the bathtub.
Yeah.
And that's because I do, you know, I don't bring my cell phone with me because I'm too cheap to risk it. And, you know, I don't really have music in there. Mm-hmm. And I just lay there and I'm relaxed and stuff comes in.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the people have benefit to writing, I don't know. I mean, I know it's like it'd be wonderful if I said they did. I had no choice. You know, I just started doing it because I was frustrated. I had stuff to say. I just started filling up notebooks. And in a way, I just chose this career because it was what I was doing anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, I also then I started blogging very early, you know, when blogs were, you know, a thing when they started. And I did it because I was tired of being mediated by editors. You know, I didn't, I felt like, you know, it was kept, my stuff kept getting cut and changed in ways I didn't like. And it was wonderful to have, for me, this sense of voice on the internet. And then I got hired by the New York Times, and all of a sudden, you know, some of the stuff that I'd blogged about, they got mad about. Well, why are you in this war with this local diner? You know, well, the diner sucked, you know, and it was funny was, and I was
and
so
they forgot my home fries.
Well, yeah, but no, I was so, it was on the Lower East Side back before there were a lot of diners or restaurants down there. And I was so desperate for like a place where you could go like interview people or meet in the middle of the day. And, you know, you go there and they literally couldn't make French fries. It was like, you know, like raw potatoes with ketchup in the middle of it. It was ridiculous.
It
so
wasn't a greasy enough greasy spoon.
Right. And there was no Yelp and there was nothing else. And yeah. So I was the only person who'd ever written anything about this restaurant. So when people started, you know, Alta Vista-ing to search, you know, my thing came up. And so then I got in this whole email war with this guy. Anyway, so I don't know how I got off on that. But I started writing and it's taken me interesting places. And so I don't know if it's right for everybody else. I mean, you know, maybe, and I've made a lot, you know, some videos and I, you know, did video interviews on AOL of famous chefs for a while when AOL was a thing. And So I don't know. I'm somebody who just has to express themselves. I don't know if that's true for everybody on earth. Mm-hmm. Mm.
I think it's great, though, that you remind everybody about, excuse me, just the power of empowerment. Because the way that I created my life coaching album was I got tired of not being cast in voiceover stuff. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to do something for I'm going to cast myself in something.
Is this the boyfriend thing you did? Or the...
Yeah. Well, yeah, yeah. That was a version of it. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. Thanks. So
virtual boyfriend.
Virtual boyfriend.
Shout out.
Yeah, right. The original thing was You're the Hero Coaching and Affirmations. And so I started to write it as a script for an audio project. And then I eventually turned it into like, you know, a book so that people could read it as well. But I remember doing that because I wanted to empower myself to give myself work and express myself.
Yeah, well, it comes right. The greatest art often, or even motivation, comes from the bottoming out, and, or, you know, just the pain of not, you know, of inertia or things not going well.
And the more successful, in a way, like the because right now I could just keep pitching stories and doing stuff. The less, in a way, you can get that. This is what I'm sort of dealing with now. Is like, how do I do things that still feel fresh and authentic, and I'm not just sort of like, well, my ego gets stroked when I have another byline, and then yeah. It's like, I've had enough bylines, it's fun, and I still need to earn a living, but, you know, there's other things I'm trying, other new ways of expressing myself that I'm where I'm trying to get.
Mm-hmm. Should we talk a little bit? We haven't had an opportunity really to talk about your foodism and your books.
Okay.
Which I'm fascinated by your relationship with the Food Network, your knowledge of their history. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, basically, where to start? I long story short on that, I was working at the New York Times, and I got a call from somebody who was telling me I needed to write a story about this guy who ran a food festival down in Miami, and that I should write an article about him. This was like spring break for chefs. And I asked the most important question you could about this food festival down in Miami, if you live in New York, which is what?
Do I get free food?
When is it? February. Uh-huh. I'm extremely interested.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So luckily, my editor sent me down there. This is 2007. And I was amazed to find that like people like Mario Batali and Emeril Lagasse and Bobby Flay had entourages and women throwing themselves at them and agents and money. And Emeril had just sold most of his businesses to Martha Stewart for like $50 million and 50. And anyway, this led me to eventually, when I left the Times, think about how did this all start? How did this happen? And all roads, as far as I was concerned, led to Food Network. And I was amazed nobody had really told their full history.
Yeah, it is amazing. Now hearing it in retrospectively, that it was untapped.
Yeah, well, I mean, when we were kids, chefs were, that was not a good business to go into. Nobody wanted us to do it. And, you know, all there was a couple shows on PBS, and they didn't think Food Network was a good idea. And it took years for it to make a profit. I could go on about this. Yeah. I have an hour shtick on this, so...
You want to get?
You better just ask me what you want to know.
Well, I'm wondering too if it was not to get too in the weeds of this, but I mean the trend. Why do you think that that trend started evolving and these guys became rock stars? Because I feel like I noticed that happening even with the home improvement shows after 9/11 when people started nesting more. I don't know if you make that
9/11. Yes, 9/11 was an important moment right? for Food Network because you got Rachel Ray and excuse me, and she started kind of showing the simple way back into the kitchen. But right. I think going back. Talking about rock stars, I mean, first of all, there's a guy named Shep Gordon, who was Alice Cooper's road manager. And there's a great documentary about him called Supermensch, which you can see on Netflix, made by Mike Myers. And Shep was literally invented the idea that chefs could be rock stars. And there's a fascinating way that he made this marriage.
Okay, this does sound familiar.
But I think, like I was talking about, you know, if you think about how music came out of the 60s, it was this very, you know, it was the most important art form for people. Music was blowing people's minds in the 60s and part of the 70s. And then, you know, come the 80s, it kind of died down a bit. But music, rock and roll music started as blues music. It is a great American art form in the Delta. And it took changes in technology like the electric guitar, television, and radio for it to become this dominant force that it did, and increasing, you know, fidelity and everything else. So if you look at food, food was this art form that was sort of not paid attention to in America very much, but starting in really the 70s at Chez Panisse, the famous restaurant in Berkeley, and Alice then Potter. In the 80s, right, with Wolfgang Puck, and, you know, the celebrity chef thing was supposed to only be an 80s thing. They thought it was, there was stories written in like 91, well, the celebrity chefs thing is over. But then what you have is cable TV is going from like 60 channels, right? MTV and, you know, all the originals to the 500 channel universe. And they were desperate. And so they had new technology with digital channels.
Right.
And they were desperate for content. And so what happened was you had a thing that had not yet been polluted by money and commerce too much. And so a great sort of American nascent art form that was happening in places like downtown New York and in Berkeley and in New Orleans and Chicago and Boston. And you put it on the air, you use a new technology, you spread it across the country. And then, I mean, when I was a kid, nobody knew what kale was. You drive across the country and there was nothing to eat but Stuckey's pecan logs. Right. And so ultimately, you take this art form, you spread it around, and it's something real and it's new. And kids were the ones who were obsessed with Food Network to start with, and I think that's ultimately how it caught on. And now it's kind of dying down our interest in it because it's become, you know, so commercialized.
Right. So quickly, what's the name of your book and where can people
from scratch? From Scratch Inside the Food Network, or From Scratch The Uncensored History of the Food Network. You can get it on Amazon. It's a popular book buying and other website.
Okay, and how can people get a hold of you?
AlanSalkin.com, which is spelled A-L-L-E-N, S like Sam, A-L-K-I-N. Alan, I asked my mom why she spelled it that way, and she said, because that's how you spell Alan.
So great. So thank you so much for being a guest.
An honor to be here.
Alan, yeah, so
really appreciate it. Great stories.
Thank you so much. I know. I feel like we could do another few hours with you. Quickly, I want to just digress. I want to do a quick shout out. Conscious Good Media, consciousgood.com. It's a transformative media digital platform that I work with, that I'm very passionate about. We're doing the Mindscape Short Film Festival here in New York City next Tuesday night, September 26th. You can find us on Facebook under Conscious Good Mindscape New York. Join us. It's going to be a bunch of mind-centric short films that are really, really amazing, beautiful work. And some of the filmmakers will be there as well. So we'd love to see you.
Yeah, it'd be great. Thanks for listening, y'all. Take care.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.
Who do you want to connect with?
Are you an entrepreneur or intrapreneur looking to build your following?
Welcome to our show.
Follow Me Friday with Joan
and Priya.
Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern
on talkradio.nyc.
We're your digital connectors.
Woo, woo!
What's that?
Hey, Hey, all you crazy listeners. Looking to boost your business? Why not advertise on Talking Alternative with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply email at info@talkingalternative.com.
Are you into comics, movies, and pop culture at large? What about music and TV? Then you're in for a treat. This is Michael Dolce, your host on TalkingAlternative.com. I've been professionally writing comic books, screenplays, and music articles for almost 15 years. Catch my show, Secrets of the Sire, at its new primetime slot, Wednesdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and get the inside scoop on the pop culture universe you love to talk about. For more info, go to SecretsOfTheSire.com.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network at www.talkingalternative.com. Now, broadcasting 24 hours a day. Talking Alternative.
Hi, this is Rob Kay.
And I'm Callie Alpert.
And we're hosts of The Rob and Callie Show. Are you looking for a show that talks about real stuff like life, love, the pursuit of being yourself?
Then you have come to the right place because we cover topics ranging from chivalry to gratitude to your relationship with money and everything in between.
So listen to us on The Rob and Callie Show, Tuesdays, 8 to 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time on talkradio.myc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your Conscious Consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to the Talking Alternative Network.